Welcome to the Concierge CPA. I'm Jackie Meyer, founder of TaxPlanIQ Software. This is a podcast for accounting firm owners and influencers who are pursuing world-class service. Let's go, y'all. Hey there, I'm Dr. Jackie Meyer, CPA, and welcome to the Concierge CPA podcast. Before we dive in, here's something exciting. TaxPlanIQ users are saving their clients an average of $40,000 in taxes per taxpayer while selling large tax plans. TaxPlanIQ is the ultimate resource for tax advisors. With nearly 500 firms on board, we're helping advisors build skills, grow confidence, and connect with a vibrant community. Want to learn more? Visit taxplaniq.com/podcast for exclusive discounts, resources, and other things mentioned in this episode. Now let's jump in. Welcome. Today we're digging into why most professionals create amazing work, but struggle to communicate that value in a way that makes people take action. Very common for tax advisors and SaaSpreneurs and a lot of those out there that listen to this podcast. So there's really a simple shift that can turn confusion into clarity and hesitation into a big yes. And I have followed our guest today, Neil Gordon, for a very long time. His newsletters are consistently some of the best thinking on messaging and persuasion I've ever read. So kudos to you, Neil, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
I'm honored to have you. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about you. I know one of my favorite books is actually The Most Powerful Sentence of All Time, which I believe came out earlier this year. So we'll definitely talk about that. But give us a little bit more about you.
I appreciate that, Jackie. And what I often talk about when people ask me about my background is how I have a background in book publishing. Like I was an editor, a low-level editor a long time ago at Penguin, like 20 years ago. And what people assume about editors, as I've found, is that they're often very nerdy, studious, bookworm type people, and they go to this fancy college and they're English majors and they could just race through all these books and have read so much since they were three kind of thing. And while I was pretty capable as a reader when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, the more I got into school, the more my reading comprehension and general reading ability fell apart. And I hated reading. I hated it so much. I didn't do any of it. I like to say that between the ages of 8 and 20, I read one book for leisure, and or at least finished one book for leisure. And that was because a girl I had a crush on was incredulous over the fact that I had never read Catcher in the Rye. So I read that to impress her. But other than that, I didn't do any reading until the second half of college. And once I moved to New York City, right after school, I hated the city. I live here today. I love the city. It's home. But as a 22-year-old, I hated it. So I needed an escape. And I started reading more books on the subway. This is before smartphones. And something shifted. And I read one book in particular called A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. And it just shattered my worldview. I started going into this really typical angsty 20-something, what's it all mean kind of thing. And I came out on the other side with a massive curiosity about how language could do that to me. I started reading everything I could find. And a couple of years later, I got an editorial assistant job at Penguin, which put me on the path just because of the analysis I had gone through on my own.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, on a personal note, as you share that story, my 8-year-old son just got diagnosed with dyslexia. We've had a lot of fights over reading, and we'll be just telling him the next, like this week at some point, and then assessing a plan at school. But I can definitely sympathize and empathize with that feeling, because he has I love reading. I've always been, I was a bad candidate growing up in school, but I was always really smart. And so I would sit in class and read Stephen King novels instead of doing the work, and then still like pass because I could figure it out. Right.
You got by on your wits. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so it's really different viewpoint than someone who struggles with the way that they visualize and do that. And so, or it's just someone in general that just doesn't like it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's hope for your son for whatever that's worth.
So. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, we're just kind of deep diving into it as we go. So if any listeners have tips for me, please let me know. I'm still trying to figure out just how to explain like what dyslexia is, let alone other things. But yeah, so I loved your book immediately after I read it, which it was like 99 cents, which that's amazing that you, you know, offer it for such a great price point. I don't know if it's still 99 cents, but
not right now, but it could happen again.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going
to
go.
I know you like to position your marketing very slyly, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just went through a course on book marketing the other day, and they're talking about the difference between a 99 cent book and going all the way up to $5.99 or $6.99, which is what the ebook is right now. And I'm like, you know, I know there are a lot of books out there, but is it really that big of a deal to go from 99 cents to $6.99? And I guess in their mindset, in some people's mindset, it is. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. No, yeah, it definitely is, but it is it's hard to understand where like that people don't really grasp that value proposition in such a small item. You know, I created a pricing methodology for accountants called the ROI method where we visualize tax savings, and it's like a no-brainer, but so many people won't do it, you know?
That's right.
So there's just a big mind shift in, I think the way we grew up, like our limiting beliefs as to how much we'll pay for a book or, you know, anything like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I still think back to college and how much Kool-Aid we drank going into the college bookstore and buying these textbooks for like $140 or whatever.
Yeah.
I never even looked at those things, and I still got a 3.5 in college. So like, I mean, it's like the exact opposite. It's like, oh, I'm not paying $6.99 for a book. And it's like, oh, I'm going to pay $140 for a book I'm not even going to use in class. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Books,
exactly.
Books play a very special role in our society, I sense.
That's for sure. That's for sure. But what I did after I finished reading your book is I immediately slacked my whole executive team at TaxOneIQ. And I was like, y'all have to understand this framework. It just like snapped into focus for me because you're teaching people change when they see an old way is no longer working and they can like unify their messaging, right? So I actually turned the ideas from the book into these like silver bullet sentences for TaxOneIQ and for accountants. But why don't you fill our audience in if they don't know what the silver bullet is and the general concept of the book, why don't you fill them in on that first?
I first of all, really appreciate that you made it actionable, Jackie, because that's just wonderfully gratifying to hear. And it's also the special nature of a book is that it can empower you to do some cool things after having a reading experience like that. In terms of what you identified as the silver bullet, which is this persuasion technique that I've been teaching folks about and of course forms the basis of the book itself, we could look back at some of the most ancient and prominent thinkers of all time to follow the cue. This is a persuasion technique that has been around for 2,500 years. We could look at Sun Tzu, the author of The Art of War. And he writes The Art of War, and it gets quoted in movies and TV shows to this day. It's still in publication, et cetera, et cetera. He gives all sorts of tools and tips on being more capable at warfare. But on line 18 of the first chapter, he says, all of warfare is based on deception. And in that one sentence, he's giving you the key. Like the old way might think you just need the biggest army and the best weapons and the most money, et cetera, the most resources. But he says that that's not actually how you win at war. You're going to win at war if you deceive your opponent. And we can see throughout military history, all of these battles that should have gone the other way, but because of the strategy, the capacity to deceive the opponent, they wound up winning. It wound up being this huge upset and all of that. And so this is a recipe for success. It's one sentence that captures an enormous sense of possibility and positive change. Another example is, let's say, a modern example, like in the book, the New York Times bestselling book, Creativity, Inc. by Ed Catmull. Ed is the co-founder of Pixar. And at the time he wrote this book, a little over 10 years ago, they were creating the movie Inside Out, the one with the I think it's Inside Out with the characters as emotions and all of that. And that was a very ambitious concept and arguably the most ambitious one they had to date by that point. And what the book is about is how did they create the kind of culture that makes those kind of ideas possible? Well, a quarter of the way into the book, he says, getting the team right is the necessary precursor to getting the ideas right. He says, a bad team will take a good idea and make it poor. A good team will take a bad idea and make it better or throw it away and come up with an even better one. And so in that one sentence, like with the Art of War, the deception statement, what Ed Catmull does is he gives us the recipe. He gives us the recipe for how to have great ideas at your company or in any real context that in, on which a team is based. And so, and there are plenty of examples of this in modern times, in ancient times, whatever it is. But the recurring theme is this one sentence: when you take one action, not two or three, but one action, you get one outcome. One action leads to one outcome. When you deceive, you win at war. When you get the team right, you get the ideas right. And on and on and on it goes. And you, when you make that the centerpiece of your elevator pitch or your value proposition, your keynote speech, your book, your webinar, your anything at all, like in, you mentioned my email newsletters and all of that, I'll put a silver bullet in a 400 word email as like this central idea. Here's the point of all of this. This is the thing that you want to do to get this outcome. It's just this weird magical thing that works. And so the book helps the reader to find this distilled essential idea for themselves, how to put into words what makes their approach to something special, which of course becomes very valuable for a tax advisor because there are so many out there. How do you make what you do, your approach, your unique take on tax advisement special and to stand out?
Okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense. So yeah, for, I guess the thing is that the definitions in our profession are just so screwed up, to be straight. Because like a tax advisor is really someone that's like strategizing and minimizing your tax liability, which is mostly not happening. There's like 3 to 5% of us that do that. Most are tax preparers.
Sure.
And so like just some of those baseline terms, just like clarifying those or redefining those in our profession tend to help out a lot. Do you think that could be like a part of someone finding that silver bullet for themselves in this profession?
That's actually tremendously ripe ground for using this kind of technique, because a tax advisor, and I appreciate that clarification, by the way, a tax advisor could really say something along the lines of what you think your greatest outcome is going to be is when someone simply prepares your tax returns for you. But it is in effectively strategizing how to limit your tax liability that you will ultimately be able to enjoy the best financial outcomes. It's not in what is prepared for you. It is how you co-create a strategy for longer term management of your finances, something like that. I would say that there's an opportunity for further refining that, but something around that, even just a silver bullet is most effective when it goes against the grain of what's commonly known or thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So most people think that tax is just about having your tax return prepared, but actually strategizing, planning, and finding a path forward based on the landscape that you're in is really going to get you the best possible outcome.
Hey, it's Dr. Jackie. Are you enjoying today's episode? If you are, here's how you can support the podcast. Like, share, and subscribe to the Concierge CPA podcast to help us reach even more listeners. Continue the discussion and connect with other accounting professionals in the Accounting Firm Influencers Facebook group or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. And now let's get back to the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I'm weary to do this or nervous to do this, but I had two different solar bullets I came up with
to help
tax preparers move to tax advisory. I'm going to give them to you and you can just pull it apart. Okay. You ready?
Yeah. I'm ready. I promise to be gentler than you're possibly anticipating.
All right. So the first one I came up with that I told my team was tax compliance is dead, which is supposed to be like AI's taking over prep. And then Tax1IQ makes advisory effortless, empowering you to become the indispensable partner your clients truly need. But from what you just told me, I think that's too complicated. I think it needs to go back even simpler than that. Mm.
Yeah, well, I think that what you're offering there, I mean, what you're sharing there is not that it doesn't have value. It's just a matter of you're making a promise around what the value is, what it does for you. And that's part of all of this. When it comes to this specific persuasion technique that we've been talking about, the larger purpose is to convince people that change is possible. It's to convince them that they can get the change, because that's why it becomes persuasive, but not persuasive in like a manipulative way, in a way that you're just trying to extract an outcome for yourself. What we're trying to get you to do with this language is to empower these folks to rethink what's possible for them as a tax professional. Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell me a little bit more about the AI's role in all of this. Like, what is the significance of AI in the coming years for tax professionals?
Well, yeah, everybody's saying that AI is going to essentially take over tax preparation. And so if that's the majority of what CPAs, EAs do right now as tax preparation, then they're essentially going to lose their work, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So that winds up being an opportunity to rethink what one's knowledge of the world of taxation ultimately means for their career. And so your software, as well as your expertise as a whole, is going to help them to shift their focus away from preparation and more into advisement. Do I have that right?
Right.
Okay. So what there might be a silver bullet around is something as it relates to, we think the value of a tax professional is in their, I'm finding a colloquial way to say this. I'm sure there's a more precise way to say it in your industry, but like to fill in with, most people think that the value of a tax professional is in being able to fill in numbers or to enter things into the forms or to fill out forms or something like that. But there's a unique opportunity for tax professionals because I might need to know more, but it's like something around like having the knowledge around, let me actually ask you something. Would you say that the advisory role comes from having a sense of how the regulations are shifting and what the ramifications of a shift in regulation ultimately mean?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's like you're using your knowledge as power. So instead of just plugging in the numbers after the fact to tell someone what they owe, you're using the tax code to your advantage before that to reduce their taxes as much as possible. And then you're not like chained to a April 15th deadline, so to speak, right? Like there's so many problems it solves by moving to that advisory side instead of the other side.
And so would you say then that the work here is in how, not just how you fill in numbers after the fact, but how you can influence your client's behavior on an ongoing basis, that there is like, because of your knowledge and because of you're able to read the landscape and know everything, it's not just about it's not just after the fact, like you just said, it's about how you can proactively create the conditions for an optimal outcome. Mm-hmm. Does that feel true?
Yes.
So that might be a silver bullet in there somewhere, is like that the key to positioning your value as a tax professional is not by filling out forms after your client's tax year has concluded, your client's financial year has concluded. Instead, as an advisor, the most powerful tax professionals will not fill in forms after the fact, but instead will proactively help their clients to create the most optimal conditions in real time for better longer term outcomes. Something like, it's probably wordier than it needs to be, but there's something like that. Do you see how that works?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I'll work on it more. Thank you for going through that with me. That's really fun.
Yeah. No, it's cool, right? Yeah. And it's like when people suddenly get your idea, you can see, oh, I get it now. And it's just really fun.
Yeah, like the big aha moment, right? And so not only does the tax advisor have to convince themselves they need this, but then they need to turn around and convince the taxpayer that how important this is, right? And so there's layers of verbiage. Okay, so we are already like almost out of time. And so I got to get to our rapid fire questions, just some fun little things, like first thing that comes to the top of your head, before we close out. Does that sound good?
Sounds perfect.
All right. So what's one selling rule most professionals misunderstand?
That they need to start with their solution. People aren't interested in your solution. They're interested in solving the problem that they want to solve. So instead, start with the problem that they already believe they have and then gradually move into your solution.
Okay, awesome. And what's the biggest communication red flag that you've ever seen or heard of in like a sales call?
An overuse of technical jargon.
Oh boy, guilty. We're all guilty, aren't we, accounts?
we love our solutions, Jackie. We love them so much. Except if you're running to the dictionary in your mind every time someone says something that you don't get, or acronyms, some sort of shorthand and all of that, then you're going to create a little too much friction for your listeners' experience, and they just won't be convinced that you understand them. And there you go.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Last question. I'm curious, what are you up to? What are you building next? And how can our listeners get more involved in your work?
What I'm working on now, which is admittedly pretty daunting, so saying it out in public here is a little harrowing for me. I'm working on helping speakers to create a keynote using a large language model AI platform, but not in like a generic kind of way. It's just really guided and specific, where you answer a bunch of questions and then it just drafts like a really involved and nuanced script for you using the principles of the silver bullet, and doing that as at least a first draft, and then they can work. It's just easier to work from a draft than just to start with a blank page. And so that's the
idea. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's super cool. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. How can people get a hold of you or contact you or learn more, or maybe sign up for your newsletter?
You can just do all of that on my website, neilcanhelp.com. And if you just want to contact me directly, it's neil@neilcanhelp.com, N-E-I-L.
Yes. Very accessible guy, Neil. We appreciate it. He actually shot out an email to his whole newsletter and was like, hey, want me to come on your podcast? I'm like, heck yeah. So thank you for that. That was super cool.
Yeah. Oh, of course. It was just like, wait a minute. I have all these people who, I mean, I have very, very high open rates on my emails and a lot of engagement. I was like, why don't I just start asking my followers if they want to interact and engage in some way? And so there we have it.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's actually something I'm working on, a concept around maximizing the relationships you already have instead of chasing and clawing for new, like new sales, new everything, just optimizing what you already have. So that's really cool that you did that. Well, thank you so much, Neil, for coming on. We appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get to connect again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye, everyone.
I appreciate you listening all the way to the end. It truly means a lot. As a thank you, I'd love to give you a free gift, my value pricing calculator and proposal workbook. This tool has helped tax advisors create eight-figure tax plans and save over $1 billion for their clients. You can now download it at taxplaniq.com/ROI-method. Thank you for being part of this journey, and I'll see you next time on the Concierge CPA podcast. Take care, y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Concierge CPA, hosted by Tax Plan IQ. We believe that every person has a unique message that can positively impact the world. If you are a successful accounting firm owner or influencer who would like to be on this program, please visit JackieMeyerCPA.com, JackieMeyerCPA.com to apply. Please share this on social media and rate us so we can continue our good work. Join our Facebook group called Accounting Firm Influencers, or connect with me on most platforms under Jackie Meyer CPA. Thanks for being accountable to transforming our industry today.